Hi, everyone. Russ Thomas here from RST Coaching Academy. Welcome to a new episode of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it.
Hey, good morning, everybody out there in internet land. This is Russ again from RST Coaching Academy, host of Money Talks, where, of course, we talk about money and how to make more of it. Been interviewing a whole bunch of people, and today it is my pleasure to introduce to you a new friend of mine from Northern California, Lita Quicknick, from California, and she is doing a number of different things out there in old CA. And she's going to talk about those things and give us some insight as to her background, where she's been coming from, what she's doing, and how to help people make more money in their lives and in their businesses. So without further ado, Lita, welcome aboard. Take it away. I want you to just tell us about you and the things that you've discovered in your life of business and prospering and so on and so forth. And I'll probably jump in and ask questions and clarify things or whatever as we go, but let's just carry on kind of in a conversational manner. So,
well, thank you. Now, so it's interesting because as you're a 10X coach, you know that in the 10X community, one of the things that they promote is to have multiple flows of income, but preferably within the same segment. And what's interesting about my life is that I've really been in two segments my whole life, and I'm not really sure that they are related. One being real estate, which I've been in for 30, 40 years. And the other is, of course, aviation. And I was an airline pilot for Pan Am. And then I did these international scheduled flag operations for Daimler Chrysler and Procter & Gamble across the Atlantic, and really catered to seven or eight different cultures and learned a lot about a high-end product. So almost my entire career has been both in real estate and in aviation. And of course, I'm not flying anymore, but I have a lot of management experience and experience in producing this product. Now, while over the years, I was looking to get the airline, Private Space Airways, financed, many, many things happened. I mean, first there was the market crash in 2008, and then there was COVID. And now, you know, there's a little bit of a slip in the economy after 2010. And all the while, we kept on refocusing, which I think is really critical to anyone in business in any field, but in particular in the airline industry, is to refocus on how one can take the existing conditions of an environment and turn them into a positive. I think that's probably one of the more significant elements in raising money, getting money, keeping money, and having people gravitate to your product. So in our case, for example, when COVID hit, we pivoted and actually were promoting being the only socially distanced airline in the country, not even Emirates was socially distanced, because even in their upper classes, they had compartments and you couldn't necessarily talk to your seatmates, or the other airlines did not have upper class seats that were conducive towards having a 6 foot or more distance during what was at one time the COVID requirements. Of course, now we know many of those conditions don't really exist. But the example here is that if you pivot to what the conditions in the environment are and use it as an advantage, you can draw in an audience that is receptive to what it is you're doing. So in the process of all this, now we've gone and COVID's come what ended in 2021, 22, we're now in 24. And what I realized in the process is that the airline concept is so much broader Right now, I'm pretty positive that anybody that's been on an airplane has not gotten off the airplane rested, has not gotten off the airplane hydrated. They haven't had a blanket or a pillow. They haven't eaten good food. Really, flying for the most part is pretty abominable. And everything you have is an extra added cost. Now, I was interested listening to another podcast yesterday and found out that almost half the revenue today in the airline industry is coming from bag fees. I mean, they've made almost half a billion, more than $500 million in bag fees. That's crazy. So I am not interested in an à la carte product. I'm interested in an all-inclusive product and creating an environment that is healthy. And so what we are doing is I am, as leader credit, dedicated to transforming commercial air travel. And people say, Lita, can you really do that? And my answer is yes. And we do that through hydration, through removing the toxicity of the air that you breathe in the cabin, and as a result of having certain elements which are not really expensive on the airplane, you can remove toxicity, hydrate people, give them an ability to breathe better, eat better, and sleep better. Now, these elements are not necessarily mutually exclusive to a high-end product, although Private Space Airways is starting in a high-end segment because that is the most lucrative segment of the airline industry. It just so happens that about 80% of the revenue in the industry comes from 20% of the travelers. So, in order to reduce market risk and get the kind of awareness of the things that we're doing, it made sense to start in that segment. But what we were putting on in terms of, for example, aviation clean air. Aviation clean air is a deionization system, and it can be put on any airplane, in any class of service, anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world. It's not really expensive comparatively. You know, everything in airplanes is expensive, but compared to other things, it's not a really expensive fix. And so every airline on every airplane that flies commercially could be adding the things that we're adding to remove toxicity from the air that passengers breathe. Because most passengers don't realize that they're breathing hydraulic fluid and oil every time they sit in an airplane cabin. Unless, of course, you're flying a Gulfstream 650, which is what Grant flies. And that airplane cycles air every 2 minutes up at altitude at 50,000 feet. Regrettably, right or wrong, commercial airlines aren't built to cycle air every 2 minutes in much larger cabins. And so they don't have the ability to refresh the air the way a Gulfstream 650 does. By putting on this deionization system, you can remove 70 to 80% of the toxicity, and now you don't have a headache when you get there. And of course, the longer you're in a cabin, if you're flying 2 hours, you don't really feel it that much. If you're flying 8 to 10 hours, you know, you get off, your headache, you have a headache, you're stuffy. Also, most of the airplanes, except for a DC-8, not a DC-8, a MAX 8. And I should say, and the Airbus 350, they don't have hydration systems on their airplane. So we can add a humidification system on the airplane, and that will humidify the air substantially. So now you have deionization, you have humidification, and now you can get off the airplane hydrated, feeling relatively rested, and it's a completely different experience that exists today on airplanes in any class of service. The last thing we're adding is a low cabin altitude modification. That's really only available on the 737 variety of airplanes, and that allows for the cabin pressure to be about 2,000 feet lower than it normally would be flying at altitude at 35,000 to 40,000 feet. So there are things that can be applied in commercial aviation today that will dramatically transform the experience and the health of the passengers who fly those airplanes.
So what you're doing is you're putting forth the effort and the expense to give your customers, your clients, a better experience in the air,
right,
in every area, and come off the plane more relaxed and more satisfied with what they experienced the last 2 hours or 8 hours or whatever. That's quite a concept. The name of your airline is Private Space Airways, I understand.
Correct. Right. It's actually, the parent company is the Silver Air Group, Inc. It's a Delaware Corp., but the name of the airline is Private Space Airways.
Okay. So you're in direct competition with what we would call the mainstream airlines. Is that correct?
Well, not exactly. First of all, the segment that we're addressing, the high-end segment, is probably the most competitive segment in the airline industry. And so from that standpoint, are we competing with major carriers? Yes. The difference is we're not going to what is known as a fortress hub, for example, Newark or Atlanta or Houston are fortress hubs, which means that they are dominated by one carrier. Now, we will be going out of San Francisco because United is not a fortress hub for London. It is a fortress hub for Asia and for China. So there may be 4, 5, 6 carriers in a large city, which we're only going to top 10 US to London markets, but they're not dominated. They have British Airways, they have American, they have United, they have Delta. And so that means that there's a huge density of market share, but we only have 46 seats on our airplane. We need very little market share to make our numbers. So by going into these very large, dense markets where we need little tiny bits of market share, we're somewhat protected from predator activity.
Huh. Okay. So you're, as opposed to like a low price, high volume deal, yours
right.
is maybe a higher price because you're going after the upper echelon of the market. And so then on the other side of it, you're going for low volume, basically 46 seats. That's not very many on an airplane, but you're making the numbers because of the price point that you're at, and you justify the price point because of the quality of service and everything else that you offer.
Right, but it's still, we are at or just below what major airlines charge. We could charge more, but we're not trying to be the price leader. We're the service leader and the product leader, hopefully. But we're not the price leader. And the fact is that when you're flying comparatively smaller airplanes, which we'll be flying the MAX 8, which they're available right now because there's so many problems that Boeing has had, which I have my own ideas as to why, but irrelevant. So you're flying a small airplane that's state of the art, going over long, long distances, which means it has low operating cycles. An operating cycle is the number of times you start and stop cycle-related actions, such as stepping on the brakes, starting the engine, turning a pump on. So these cycle-related things are minimal on a long-haul route. So we're flying a long-haul route at altitude with low operating cycles. And so therein lies the ability to underpin lower operating costs, as opposed to our competitors, with high revenues. And so therein lies the economy to deliver high levels of service. Even if we weren't delivering lots of high levels of service, like extravagant meals or this or that, just the fact that they're on the airplane and they breathe better, sleep better, and eat better is going to be monumental.
Yeah, wow. So now, private The company Private Space Airways is up and running now. It's
It
flying.
is not up and running. We had
Okay.
an investor that had committed $100 million in October of 2022. He became very ill and he pulled out of the deal.
Oh.
That was a few months after my father passed away. And so, the rest of 22, the last 3 months, and most of 23 was a little bit of a blur as a result of my father's passing. And so I picked everything up again to reshape, refocus, and basically put together a current plan because you have to keep updating numbers and everything. Just, end of 23, beginning of 2024, and now we're all systems go on identifying the funding so that we can become a reality.
Oh, cool. Are you registered? You have to be registered with the SEC?
No,
No.
we would be only taking money from accredited investors. I've thought about doing crowdfunding with accredited investors. I haven't. I've been more focused on family offices, some of the family offices that are created by the families that own some of the large airline conglomerates, such as LATAM, for example, which is a South American airline conglomerate, or individuals that own airlines such as Avianca. So the South American carrier owners are good candidates because there's a need to redeploy capital that they have in the South American countries to the US. Now, under the current political environment, there's been kind of a slowdown because people are wondering, well, wait a minute, this is a lot like our country. So, there's a little bit of a slowdown, but this is the approach that we're taking right now. And hopefully, through people hearing this, there will be somebody out there that wants to author a change in commercial air travel because we can unequivocally transform commercial air travel where people will breathe better, eat better, and sleep better. And that's a huge thing. There's no reason people should get off with headaches and stuffy and dehydrated.
Yeah, what a drag. It takes the fun out of flying, takes the fun out of traveling.
That's right.
What is your target investment dollars that you're looking for to get
Well, we're
going?
actually the total capital raise is 180 million.
Okay.
We are looking for 55 initially. The first 5 million, of course, is to just put back in place everything that had been in place before our $100 million investor became ill. 50 million takes us through 13 months because we are doing our own certification. At the end of 13 months, or somewhere between 10 and 13 months, we'll get another 50 million to continue with the FAA requirements, hire people, get the airplanes ready for proving runs, which you have to do for the FAA. So 15 months from the time we close on the first 55 million, we would be up and running. And then there'll be another requirement because the FAA requires you to have 3 months operating capital with zero revenues. So there'll be another 50 million there. And then we threw in some money at the end of the second year for growth, which we probably do not need. And I personally believe that if we are successful in promoting this concept with grants marketing efforts, we will have our seats pre-sold before we ever start flying.
Oh, that's great. Speaking of Grant, I mean, maybe you've done this or thought of this. You might want to contact Grant and Elena about becoming investors.
Well, I have thought of it and I would love for that to happen. I haven't approached him. He's big on the speak and the speak off and pitching whatever it is you're pitching and it's a slightly different bent. And so I haven't really focused. I did about a year ago. I sent him a little video. I have some good videos now to send. But I haven't focused on that now because I've been refining the approach, and it would be wonderful to have them. I mean, I would be even willing to make it Cardone Airways, and that would be fine with me. And I've done the 360, and Brandon is amazing. Brandon and Natalie, I mean, they're fantastic partners for Grant and Elena, and there's so much to learn and apply to our entity. But they're not interested really in startups. You know, Grant is actually as successful as Grant is, he's actually quite risk adverse. And so, and of course he flies around in a Gulfstream 650 that recycles air every 2 minutes. So it hasn't been a priority, but you know, something could change, something could trigger, you know, I can send him another video and Annie can show it to Grant and, you know, we can see what happens. I have, you know, had a few hills to climb over the last year with everything that has gone on in the industry, in the world, and in my life, you know, a combination. And so now, you know, I'm back to the straight and narrow and being focused and communicating why this is so important and why somebody would want to participate. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is that everybody, and I could be overstating this, but I don't think so, they're not happy with their experience on airplanes. I mean, when was the last time you were on an airplane? Were you hydrated? Were you rested? Did you eat well? Did you have a blanket? Did you have a pillow when you got off the airplane? Probably not, I dare say. And so this idea of having a transformational, healthy experience is appealing to people, but it's a fantasy because it's never existed. I mean,
right. Wow, wow. When did you start this vision, this dream? When did you begin putting this together?
Well, at least two decades ago. I mean, what happened was I had been working in as executive, and I did these international scheduled operations, which were both operated as international scheduled flag carriers, one for Daimler Chrysler between Pontiac, Michigan and Stuttgart, Germany, and one for Procter & Gamble between Brussels and Cincinnati. And both had, you know, six or seven cultures on their airplanes as far as the passengers that we flew. So I learned a lot about what diverse culture passengers want on a product. Anyway, I put those two operations together, literally lease to linens, and they were very successful operations. And that I thought, well, the public should have a great product like this. And then a series of things happened. You know, 9/11 happened, the market crash happened, COVID happened. And so every time we were ready to launch financially, some major world event happened. And I have been steadfast on this concept, and it's only gotten better because the things that we're doing didn't really exist for commercial airplanes 10 years ago.
Oh, wow. So off and running, off and flying, I should say.
Off and flying, that's right. Here.
The other thing you're involved in is real estate.
Right, right.
And I saw that on your thing here, that's a venture fund. Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, I'm also involved in some of Grant's real estate deals, but I have been involved in commercial real estate in pretty much every single aspect, whether it's leases or transactions or, you know, large big boxes. I've done a lot of complex and comprehensive trades and reverse trades for 1031 exchanges, which is for tax preservation. And so I'm very well versed on markets and trading and how that works in the real estate industry. I am actually involved with a partner in Florida in a 506C, where we have just recently partnered with a very reputable company that is both a developer, a landowner, and a real estate developer. And we're the exclusive capital partners for them and would be partners in their first three ventures, one of which is a small hotel, one of which is a mixed use, and the other is strictly multifamily.
Oh.
And having that strength in a partner is really critical because that's attractive to people that want to put money in. So while projects are waiting to be initiating cash flow positive, those investors would be earning, 5-6%, very similar to what Grant is doing with his funds. And then my partner in Investix and I will be working on some of the projects as co-GPs on the other projects with this real estate partner. So that there's no question that multifamily is the place to be in real estate and financial markets. And if you're large enough to be able to afford a really great management company, that's where you can make significant amounts of money.
So it takes the money to be able to buy the big complexes and to be able to afford the high-end property management company to keep the place running, keep the place profitable for you, right?
Right. Well, I mean, anything over 100 units, it starts to be viable to have a management company because it's large enough so that A, you can, a little bit of rent increase goes a long way in terms of increased value. And it's large enough so you can spread out management costs over a very broad revenue base.
Right.
You can't do that in 15 to 30 units. It becomes cost prohibitive.
So in that regard, then, are those, 15 to 30 units would be more like owner managed?
Right. It would be owner managed. I mean, for example, in California, anything over 16 units, you have to have a live-in on-site manager. The rules are a little bit different state to state, but, smaller units do require owner management. Unless you have a number of buildings, it's hard to get a management company. And so, I've done that in my previous life in my family business with small buildings and smaller. And, my sister is my partner after my father passed away a year and a half ago. And she hates multifamily because we never had enough units to justify a management company. And the one time we tried, they took us to the cleaners. I mean, when you have a management company and they take a fee, it's like they turn the faucet on and like dollars just come out of the faucet and they have no concept of what they're spending or what they're doing. They figure they need it, they spend it. And that doesn't work for small mom and pop operation.
Yeah, they're not spending it as though it's theirs. They're spending it as though it's yours and don't care, right?
Right. And so I really learned that from Grant's real estate teachings. You have to have more than 100 units to make it viable to work with a management company. Because believe me, I don't want to fix any more toilets. We had some buildings in the Tenderloin in San Francisco. And, we're constantly like bailing the maintenance man who was an alcoholic out of prison. And there were like drug addicts in San Francisco. I mean, the things that are going on in San Francisco today aren't new. They've just become exacerbated with the liberalism in terms of the laws and, the catch and release and the leniency on stealing and so forth.
So your background, your forte had been primarily commercial, but you're also into the multifamily as well now.
Right. Well, I mean, we had multifamily. It just wasn't large number of units. Yeah. We've been in Heinz 57 variety real estate, whether it's, condominium warehouses, which my dad and his 70-year partner built before they both were deceased. We've been in large big boxes, which might be something like a Michaels or a Capital One or, things that have, long-term leases and there aren't rent bumps, but it's solid income, usually around 6%, sometimes 7%. Walgreens, same thing. They don't have rent bumps, but they have very consistent income streams and lease renewals. So lower risk, lower return. There isn't the opportunity for the kind of refinancing that multifamily does. We've done multifamily, but on fewer units. So time we had 102 units, but they were spread out over four buildings. So that doesn't really count because you don't have the revenue base to support a management company. Every property should be its own profit center.
Right. Indeed. Absolutely. So we're talking multifamily apartments.
Right.
What about residential?
You know, Personally, I've bought and sold six or seven homes or condos. I leapfrogged my way into a beautiful house, which when I started with Grant, he said, sell your house. So I sold my house and I put all my profits into, two funds in Cardone Capital. And one of them's doing okay. The other one is not doing okay because I made the mistake of not evaluating whether there were, fluctuating rates. And of course, when the rates dropped, or when the rates changed, the rates went up. I think that was Fund 20 was not great. Fund 16 has been really good. But for the most part, all of his funds are fantastic. His abilities are incredible. Long term, they'll be doing really well. So anyway, to answer your question, I've had six or seven houses or domiciles. I've sold them all, 2 years out, leapfrog my way to get, fairly substantial asset. Very familiar with loans and mortgages and so forth. And today I'm not living in a house I own. I'm living in a condo I rent, which, if you listen to Cardone Capital and Grant, you shouldn't ever buy, you should rent. And yet, I'm at a point where I like to be a little bit more comfortable. I don't know what I'll do when I move to Miami. Probably rent at first, but ultimately I'd like to own. And so, yeah, I mean, in terms of residential, but I don't want to own a bunch of houses and rent houses. There's not a lot of money in that. It's more trouble than it's worth.
The houses,
Yeah.
single family homes. I guess
Mm-hmm.
there's I think I interviewed a fellow a couple of weeks ago that was in investment residential properties. That was his forte. That would be houses, not
Right.
multifamily
Right.
apartments. And he was a big proponent of that and just a believer in it. And it's just, I guess, a person that's thinking about doing this has to do their research and come up with what seems to work best for them.
For
So,
them,
yeah.
well, you do, and this is the thing. I mean, with residential, it's very different. If you're a developer, like I have a colleague that is developing 22 homes in an area where there's 500 homes in a somewhat rural area, but nice area between San Jose and Santa Cruz, beautiful wooded area, and there'll be appeal there, but he wants to just develop the plots with the city and then sell it to a developer. So if you're a developer and you're a builder, then it makes sense to buy low and sell high and sell individuals. If you're just buying one-offs, depending upon the geography that you're in and what the prognosis would be for what's happening with the political leniency that develops in certain cities or communities, or the zoning that they're talking about, putting high rises in the middle of residential. I mean, there's so much that's changing, and hopefully it won't change so fast that people like that can get into trouble, but they can get into trouble. In California, they can get into trouble.
You got to pay attention, do your due diligence,
Due diligence, right.
study, and maybe ask advice and get some guidance. But then it's your decision as to what is going to meet your needs the best.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So,
So.
but I mean, there's no question that real estate is, in my opinion, and the opinion of other very successful people, such as Warren Buffett and Grant Cardone, is that, multifamily is where you can achieve generational wealth. There's no question about that.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. The third point that you had listed here is passive income. What do you
Correct.
mean by passive income? Is that going back to the real estate, to
Well,
the
that's definitely going back to the real estate. I mean, as I said, I've invested in two of Cardone Capital's funds. I'm not actively managing any of those properties the way I have for our own account. And that is just, a check every month. I don't do anything. I'm a limited partner. His buildings are new enough and he's bought at the right prices so that there's a fair amount of depreciation, which is particularly helpful, especially right now when, my father passed away and My sister and I have had to pay, you know, estate taxes,
Yeah.
not a large amount, but enough. And the thing is, as an heir, you do not get a step up in value. But my dad never believed in selling anything. You know, he and his partner built small and held on and never sold. And so capital gains are dramatically high and they have to be paid. In California, the governor wants his money a year in advance.
Oh, wow.
So
he can give it away to other people that really don't deserve it. Oh, that's a whole nother subject, isn't it?
That's right. That's right.
So anyway, passive income, that's the great thing. What do you think it takes for a person that wants to get into real estate investment and this passive income thing? What do you think is the, say, the minimum buy-in that a person should be looking at having set aside in order to get started in that arena?
Well, I think that they should make an investment of at least $50,000, more if possible. I mean, you've got to figure that good passive income investments are going to be yielding, you know, around 6%, 5.5% to 6.5%. Whether they pay monthly or quarterly, historically REITs pay quarterly, Grant pays monthly. Not all of the real estate developers pay monthly. So you want to have enough invested so that you have more than $10 coming to you every month.
I would say.
Yeah. But the way to do that is to set aside, as Grant suggests, an investment account. And, you know, whether you put in $250 a month or $1,000 or $4,000, I mean, Grant suggests 40% of your income. I don't believe that a lot of people who are just starting out will put in 40% in an investment account because they're not earning that much.
Yeah,
and especially now with inflation. I mean, my God, what I buy at the supermarket today is three times as expensive as it was 6 months ago in California.
Yeah, boy, oh boy. And what is the target return, would you say? You mentioned 6%.
Well, 6%, but they generally have, you know, IRRs of, you know, 12%. And, you know, and these are long-term investments. I mean, they don't really get sold for 8 to 10 years.
Okay. And what's an IRR?
An internal rate of return.
Okay. And that takes into account what?
The capital invested, right?
Yeah, about 12%. Okay. All right. I'm just asking these questions on behalf of the audience that might be thinking about, hey, I'd like to do this, you know? And so,
well, I mean, what's great, what Grant has done is made these investments available to non-accredited as accredited. So accredited, you have to have a net worth, a cash flow of $200,000 or net worth of $200,000 or more, and you become, quote, accredited. Non-accredited investors don't have that kind of net worth. And he's made available, you know, investments of, you know, $5,000.
$5,000 is the minimum.
50, right.
Yeah, for the non-accredited is $5,000. And do those, and honestly, I haven't looked that deeply into Cardone Capital, but does that still qualify for the, like, the standard rate of return, 6%? And the,
well, yeah, but he doesn't pay monthly on non-accredited.
Those are quarterly, I think.
He pays quarterly on non-accredited investors.
Which is fine. Who cares, you know?
Right.
But anyway, so folks, people, you know, $50,000, Lita says, good place to start. But if you don't have $50,000, start where you're at. If you got $5,000,
right,
hey, give me a call. I'll fix you up with the guy that I've been talking with at Cardone Capital. And you can put in $5,000 and still make 6% quarterly. So it's still a good deal. Kind of coming to the end.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about your passion. I could tell it was your real passion.
Right.
That's what you spoke about first. And that's what you've spoken about the longest. And
right.
Your airline thing.
That's so correct.
That goes without saying, and it's not something that that people, typical people, except unless they've got a, $50 million or $100 million to invest, but in this real estate thing overall, and in your life of business, real estate, the airline, getting that going, what advice might you have for a person that's kind of thinking, how can I do better? How can I make more money? What should I do? What would you tell that person?
Well, do something you're passionate about and that you love. To do something you don't like can create a weight. I mean, not everybody loves everything that they do, but if they focus on things that they love, they're going to do it better, more frequently, and more consistently, and that should generate greater amounts of success. And the other thing is seek out successful people and learn what they learn, and choose one or two people and study what they do and see if any of those principles can be applied to your own personal life to be able to implement one or two elements of discipline. Not everybody's going to implement, 10 or 15 steps that require discipline in their daily life because people generally don't change that dramatically. But
Yeah.
if they can implement one or two, if they can look at, oh, I can save money here and I can, commit to putting that in an investment fund, even if it's $150, something. I had a bank account that had 6 cents in it because I had depleted it a number of years ago, and the bank kept it open because I have a number had a number of accounts at this one bank, and now I'm using it as an investment account. And whether it's $100 or $1,000, it's going in there as a savings account.
It's building a nest egg for you to turn into something that will generate probably passive income for you,
Right,
the
right,
real estate
right.
world. Okay. One of the things that I see in you, and that is a tenacity and a stick-to-itiveness. Just because when I asked you when you started the airline thing, you said it was 2 decades ago. That is
It
20
was.
years that you have been able to maintain, to a greater or lesser degree, an interest and a passion and a goal of getting this airline thing going. Folks, that is part of success, is to have the tenacity and the stick-to-itiveness, not giving up just because things don't go your way at any point in time. Things have not gone Lita's way in many points of time, but she has stuck it out. And because she's done that, she can't help but succeed sooner or later. One day she's going to run across this individual that's going to help finance this whole operation and get this thing off the ground. And it's because of her tenacity. And it's going to be, folks, because of your tenacity too, of getting a dream, having a dream, a goal, and setting off on the way to get that thing through it, make it into fruition, make it happen. Am I right? I mean,
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, don't quit. That's the first
that's
thing
right.
Grant will tell you. Don't quit.
Yeah,
Don't give up on your dreams.
I was at a Daytona Beach Chamber of Commerce meeting a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. And they went around the room and they said, well, just give us a one sentence for like something of a good thought. And I said, well, there's two steps to success. Number one is you get started, and number two, you don't quit.
Right.
And I heard that one many, many years ago, and that's it, folks. So get started, don't quit. There's going to be roadblocks, there's going to be stuff you got to plow through, go over, go around, or whatever. But if it's a dream that you've got, don't give up. Don't give up. On the way to financial success, get a plan. Get a plan. Save some money, put money aside, have an investment account, get into something passive. And obviously, real estate is a going thing. It's always going to be real estate. So that's great. And you're building your own investment fund. Is that correct for your real estate operations?
Well, that's through a company called Avestix, Avestix,
Okay.
and that is headquartered in Florida, founded by my colleague Susan Lindeck. She and her husband moved here from Australia 3 years ago. I met her in the first Platinum Real Estate course that Grant taught. And that is a 501c, and it is only for accredited investors.
Okay, so it would rule out many people if they're not accredited based on
Right.
the criteria of net
Right.
worth and yearly income. Okay,
Right.
all right. So, but there's ways to do it. Get $5,000, folks. Give us a call. We'll fix you up with Cardone Capital, and you'll get started in your own real estate portfolio. So, if somebody would like to pick your brain, maybe a little further, are you open to that? Would you
Oh,
accept a phone
absolutely.
call or anything like that?
Absolutely. You can, there's a landing page on privatespaceair.com. We have a website, privatespaceair.com, and space is SPACE, so privatespaceair.com, and it's Lita Kwetnik, and I would be delighted to speak with anybody that like more information on Private Space Airways.
There you have it, folks. Private Space Air. I thought it was
Well,
privatespaceairways.com.
it is Private Space Airways, but on the website, we made it a little shorter so
Okay.
people aren't can put
All right.
it in easier.
That's to remember. Right. Privatespaceair.com if you're interested in talking with Lita a little farther about these things we've discussed. Any final words before we close out here for the day?
No, thank you so much. I just think it's so important for you to encourage people to pursue their dreams, not quit, find ways of creating passive income, generating other funds. And there's no question that podcasts are the way to go. So I want to thank you so much for what you're doing, because it's not just me, it's anyone who participates in what you're doing will be helped by what you do.
Well, I hope so. And of course, obviously, we're in this to help our audiences as well, that that we give value as we're doing the interviews, and something that they can take and put to use in their own lives. And in this particular subject, we're talking about money and how to make more of it. So that's the theme, is to help people in their financial lives, basically. I think on my main website, the rstcoachingacademy.com, I've got a statement across the top. Basically, our goal is to end financial suffering one person at a time. So that's basically what we're about. We've got ways to accommodate that, as you know. So anyway, with that, Lita, appreciate your time. Thank you for your passion, your tenacity, your wisdom, your insight, and everything that you're about. And we do welcome you to come to Florida, because we know that you're going to be a blessing to this state with the right attitude and the right ideology. And so we're glad to have you come. Some of the other folks coming, maybe not so much, but I know your heart. I can tell your heart. And so that's wonderful. So
Thank
anyway,
you so
folks,
much.
all right, folks, that's it for today for another episode of Money Talks. And glad to have you with us. Hope you've gained something out of it. Anything I can do for you, you know how to reach me there at the end. You'll hear more about it. Again, anything you'd like to discuss with Lita directly, private airspace.
No,
Private
private
space
space
air
air.com, right?
space air.com, privatespaceair.com. And she's standing by to help you. So anyway, over and out, folks. We'll talk to you next time. See you down the road. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, thanks for being here today for another episode of Money Talks. I hope it was informative and encouraging to you. If it struck a chord in your heart, or if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Visit us at rstcoachingacademy.com. Call 386-286-2450
or send an email to email@rstcoachingacademy.com. Thanks again, and until next time, be great.